Today is Thursday. It is December 7th, 2017. It's 11:14 in the morning. I'm John Williams, and this is The Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record in the studios of WGN Radio. By the way, I'm also on weekdays from 1 to 3 and Saturdays from 10 to noon. You think this is swell? You should hear our regular show. I hope you do.
I'm Steve Bertrand, host of The Business Lunch on WGN.
I'm Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, and I also do the Prickly City comic strip and the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN+. Plus,
Eric Zorn and Chris McQuarrie from the Chicago Tribune cannot join us. She, the editorial writer. He, the fill-in-the-blank columnist. But I do want to say this about Eric Zorn and Mary Schmeek. They do an annual Christmas sing. This year they're doing, I think, 6 days of shows. It's a Christmas sing. The proceeds go to charity. They do it with the folks from the Old Town School of Folk Music in Chicago. Brendan and I have been to this a number of times. We were at the first show for the 2017 season last night. That show is a gift to the city.
Oh, absolutely.
It really is. These are such talented people on stage. They ain't making any money on it. They have so far turned over $600,000 to needy kids and causes throughout Chicagoland.
Wow, good for them.
And you know how you were complaining the other day, Steve, that you weren't in the Christmas spirit?
Yeah.
And you're not. This puts you in it, in a very Christian, in a very also secular, but just in a true spirit of the holiday, family, giving, charity, purity. It's all that. And it really is a wonderful thing. Everybody wears red and green sweaters, and we sit there and sing.
Yeah, I have to admit, the first year they invited me when I got here, I was thinking, wow, that sounds really lame.
Yeah, I know.
I did.
Know.
No. Well, I just thought, oh, we're going to sit around and do Christmas right. carols with a, you know. And no, the vibe of the place is just uplifting.
It is.
Tremendous.
It is totally that. And there's Mary Schmeek, the Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist, cranking on the piano really well and singing some too.
In the mandolin?
Yes. And then Eric plays the fiddle and the banjo, a number of instruments. Last night he just played the fiddle, the violin, but plays it so well, sings so well. Their stage presence is extraordinary. It's just a cheerful, good show.
Yeah.
They complained, however,
yes,
about the cover art, and you're able to also see the video that's attached to this podcast if you're checking it out in a number of ways. Anyway, the Songs of Good Cheer Christmas Song Book has cover art by you, Scott Stantis.
Yes.
Zorn complained bitterly last night that in drawing him, you did not include enough hair.
I see, Scott. I see his hair there.
Well, you can see it, and on the back. They actually right. blew it up there, so you can see.
Yeah.
It's a little homage to Linus, isn't it?
it does have a little bit of a
I hadn't,
Charles
Schultz. That's
entirely
possible.
That's what Christmas is all about, Scott.
It does
Stantis.
Look more like. Poor Scott. He looks more like Linus now than he does a tall, hairy, handsome man. Other than that, good job to all. Jason Grotto. By the way, you can't get tickets to it this year. Make it a point to get tickets to Songs of Good Cheer next year. Jason Grotto at ProPublica and the Chicago Tribune have another giant story this week about property taxes in Chicago. Previously, they told you if you are poor, you are probably overpaying. If you're rich, you're almost certainly underpaying your residential taxes in Cook County. Now they say the same is true for businesses. But this is just another nod to the business of good, expensive, difficult-to-do journalism, because we don't know this without them pouring a year's worth of resources into this story. And it's a shame. It's also a shame for those of us who have nice condos in the city, because if this ever catches up with us, our property taxes are going to go up.
You mean if they start to tax people fairly?
Fairly, right? No. But they also said, okay, here's the story of an $800 million building downtown Chicago, which Joe Berrios' office has assessed at $395 million. On the west side, there's a mom-and-pop shop daycare or somebody else who's running a small business, and they pay $200,000 for that little property, and they run their business. Berrios has it assessed at $300,000. And these people sometimes don't have the resources or the knowledge to fight it. And sometimes they do, but they just go, oh, screw it, I'll pay right. the taxes, you know? It's just a shame what's happening in the city.
Well, it's a terrible system, and it's terrible from the roots up. And Berrios, Joe Berrios, is one of the very worst examples of, you know, his department being A, outdated, B, it's the, you know, Family and Friends Employment Agency.
It is.
And C, you have guys like Ed Burke, guys like Mike Madigan in the state, who the way they make millions of dollars is to be attorneys for businesses that own, in fact, I think Ed Burke's firm handled Donald Trump's building here and got
several times
like $1 million, $1.5 million chopped off their tax bill. And it's an unfair system. I mean, it should just be a wide open, transparent system. You paid this much for your property. It's assessed at this. Here's what you pay.
Yeah.
But no, of course, typical for Chicago, it's this tiered, corrupt system. And, you know, unless you have the deep pockets to hire Ed Burke or Mike Madigan or.
And we've talked about the Ed Burke story here before. That he needs to recuse himself from Donald Trump business if he is representing the taxpayers in Chicago.
Well, he needs to recuse himself from the government business.
One of the other.
That side. It's not about Trump. It's about he's fighting to take money from state or from city government that he's spending.
That's what they pointed out in the ProPublica story, in the Tribune story, is that the total amount of dollars that Cook County is supposed to get is a fixed amount. So if you hire Ed Burke and you're Donald Trump and you get your building valued at less, you pay less taxes. Somebody has to make up that difference. Now, that's a legitimate business that Burke can do, but he can't represent. I know he's the city and we're talking about the county, but you can't. There's tremendous overlap there. You can't represent the people and that client at the same time. Who suffers? All of us. If you live in Cook County, you're paying more because Ed Burke is working for Donald Trump or other high rollers.
Right, and that's the problem. And you touched on it. He says he's not doing anything illegal. It should be illegal. This should be an ethics wall that's too much, you know, this big.
This is why I should be king.
And this is why Chris Kennedy says he should be governor, right? Because that's one of the things he's running on, that there should be a law that this should be prohibited when it comes to Mike Madigan and I'm assuming others.
Right.
Here's another tax story for you. Alderman Derek Curtis from the 18th Ward has an annual property tax bill on his home of $2,200. He's making $117,000. I didn't know Alderman got paid $117,000.
Well, that's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a part-time job.
I don't think it is. But he forgot to pay his property taxes. He said, it slipped my mind. When the Sun-Times called him out on it, he immediately got out his credit card and paid the $1,000 he was delinquent. He only owes $2,200 a year. And he put it on his credit card, which kind of makes me sad for him. But there he did it. I don't know why he doesn't just have it in his monthly mortgage payment if he's doing that. I can totally relate to people who forget to pay bills they don't want to pay. You know what I mean? If there's something out there.
I did forget to pay my property tax once.
This is what I mean.
Once. And that's because, you know, and this has always bothered me. I think this still happens in Cook County. In Lake County, they mail you the bill one time for two payments. So you've got to remember to make that second payment in September, right? So they get first one's due in June, and then they say, and pay this a month in September or October. But you don't get anything in the mail. So if you don't remember. Anyway, when we first moved up there, I forgot the first year or something. But the penalty was such that I never forgot again.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's hefty. It's hundreds of dollars. Now, I'm sure this alderman faced a similar penalty.
No doubt.
Are we all laughing? In fact, I think they said he did. His bill was low enough that I don't suppose it was onerous. But, I don't. But if you are a public official, if you're an alderman, good grief. You know, the bar is so low here in Chicago. But could somebody please just rise to the position, pay your taxes, don't be corrupt? I want to talk about Chance the Rapper for a second. Do you think generally, Steve, what's your assessment of Chance the Rapper's public role in Chicago these days?
You mean positive or negative?
Sure.
I'm going to go positive.
Yeah, I don't think it's a hard one.
Then why'd you ask me?
Well, because here's here's what he's doing.
I mean, but it's difficult at times. That's the point I'm trying to make. I mean, it's positive, but he's a thorn too. It's not all.
He's
honey.
Doing some grandstanding.
Yeah.
This week, he got Google to give $1.5 million to a Powell school in Chicago for a computer lab so that the kids that are taking coding classes will have the best equipment.
Fifth graders, I think.
It was the delightful kids, and hooray for Chance. But here's what he's also doing, and he's letting Google leverage him for PR purposes. I mean, Chance is you know, really grassroots, ground up. It's my money. You guys won't do it. I'll do it. He calls on the mayor or the governor or whomever. So that's all great. I'm just worried about
you're Steve. Bothered because he's promoting
well Google. It was a
donations.
Great commercial. It's a great commercial for
well,
Google.
Good, they deserve it. They gave $1 million.
Yeah,
I'll give them that commercial.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am too. I just hope that we don't come back in a few weeks and find out that he got money under the table or some. You know that. Every time there seems to be something that is just perfect, you find out it's not as good as you'd hoped it was. And more power
and you
to
say, I don't have the Christmas spirit. Santa Chance is delivering an education, and you're looking for the coal.
I know, and it makes me wonder then, so has Kanye done this? Has Michael done this? Has Oprah done this? Give me all the one-name famous Chicagoans. Anthony has. I mean, Rizzo's been very generous.
Yeah, they all seem to. I mean, there seems to be a really strong flow of altruism in this city, which is really one of its positive points.
You know, I'm going to say yes, but I'm also going to say I don't like the question. I think we should focus on who is, not who isn't. I don't like when we start saying, well, this guy or this woman, you know, makes all this money. What is she doing? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I mean, they will or they won't, but let's applaud the ones who do.
And is this embarrassing to the public schools or to the city?
Well, that's what I mean, where it's not, it's uncomfortable. He's making it, you know, He's like,
you guys won't do it. Look, I'll do it. I'll get it done. And I'll get Google to kick in a mill, too.
Well, and that's the, you know, in the city, schools here are just dreadful. And it seems to be, I mean, you know.
Are they that dreadful?
A lot of them are. Yeah. And the expectation, you know, I mean, George Bush had one of the great lines of all time, you know, the soft bigotry of low expectations.
Let's give a hug. That's my favorite Bush. That's maybe the best thing that came out of the Bush administration.
Not anymore.
What?
Give anyone a hug.
Oh,
right?
no huggy. Sorry.
Speaking of that, Al Franken resigned just moments
But I do
before.
Love that. I think of that phrase a lot. Because
what's that?
The bigotry of low expectations. I mean, it's something that really, I think is a really important phrase that we need to keep in mind. If we expect too little, it's like so many times I'm like, well, John's show is okay, but it's John. And, you know, this is not fair to anyone.
Especially John.
Especially John.
I'm going to talk about Al Franken now. He just quit the United States Senate. Steve, should he have?
In this day and age, politically, yes.
What does that mean?
There are so many different things. I mean, you've got the Roy Moore thing going on right now. You've got the president.
Yeah, but Roy Moore is going to get elected.
I understand that, but that's all part of it. And you've got, you know, the president who is caught on tape talking about how he molested women. And then you've got more and more women coming up speaking against him. Now, he gave an interesting speech. I watched the beginning part of it. I think, Scott, maybe you saw more. But
Al Franken,
where he said, look, I did not do some of these things. And he said, other things I remember differently.
He said very differently.
Very differently. He said,
that's the Garrison Keillor approach, too, by the way. But keep going.
Well, I mean, so, but then he said, but
must
look.
Be a Minnesota thing.
I can't continue. Then he said, look, I can't continue to this ethics fight and represent the people of Minnesota, which is kind of a stock phrase. But I thought, and then he pointed out very up top, too. He goes, the irony is not lost on me that I'm quitting today while Roy Moore has the full support of the Republican Senate or of the Republican National Committee. And we have a guy in the Oval Office who's caught on tape saying that he gropes women.
Right. And I think, too, I wonder if that's not a part of why he resigned.
Yeah, I do.
Well,
too.
You know, he said he's going to resign in the coming weeks.
Which I thought was really curious.
So maybe there was a reason for the resignation to come out now to give the Democrats the sort of
The cover.
He's falling on the sword for the party so that they can make better their case against
Roy
the Republicans.
Moore, yeah.
And I mean,
boy, that's big of him. I mean, think about that. These guys love that job. They love the power. They love the money.
Sure.
They love the prestige and all that goes with it. He's going to give that up for the party? Wow.
But part of his speech, which I thought was very powerful and will not get reported very widely, but he said, you know, I have, you know, great, healthy kids. I have a loving wife I've been married to forever. He says, I'm going to be just fine.
Right. I did hear that.
And I thought, well, you know, okay, that's commendable to say that, you know, I'm going to be just fine. You know, this isn't my life. As you mentioned, most of these guys and women, this is their life. This is what they live for. It's their essence. Al Franken, I think, is a different.
But I hope so. Way. I mean, I like Al Franken. I think he has a great story.
And he's a good senator. He is a good senator.
And this is a guy who, you know, was an intelligent comic and wanted to be in politics. And he was on, Air America for a while. But, you know, there were stories about when he decided to run for the Senate, how he buckled down and he traveled the state and he really learned. I mean, I think he took it all very seriously. It's not saying that, not to diminish at all, his behavior, but you
know, they're separate boxes.
But
Steve,
I remember, I mean, I said, right, and you'd see him being interviewed, and you could see him trying not to be funny in interviews, because he would be naturally funny, and he's trying not to because he's trying to be a senator.
I got into I did not know it was legendary, but apparently a legendary yelling match with him over dinner one time. He was our guest at the editorial cartoonist convention. I was the former president, so I got to sit near him, and we. Apparently,
what'd you argue about?
Whether or not the national media was the national network's coverage of the then presidential election was fair and balanced.
Which election was that?
I think it was 2004.
So it would have been Obama's.
No, Bush. 2004, yeah. Bush Kerry.
Oh yeah, pardon me.
The Swift voters.
Yeah. Yes, for truth.
Well,
Swift voters for truth.
When the Franken story first came out, I on this podcast said I think we're conflating things and that this is ludicrous. Now, nine more women later, and allegations that are more serious than him taking a stupid photo or stealing a horrible kiss backstage have changed my view of this.
Right.
And maybe unfairly still, because he's denying that some of that happened. But he's evidently saying, right, Steve, that true or not, I can't be a functional representative.
What he's saying is right. I can't go. He said he couldn't go through the Senate Ethics Committee investigation and still represent the people
of
Minnesota.
Of course, Roy Moore's going to have to do that. Actually, I don't know what's going to happen.
Come on, Roy Moore's going to be president by the time this year's over.
I'm going to say
Roy is going to get elected.
Right?
I'm not convinced of that.
Are you convinced of that?
I think he's going to be majority leader. That's more likely, yeah.
Polls from Alabama.
And they are not going to throw him out.
The polls from Alabama do not.
Well, they will not throw him out.
Cooperate. If they won't. And the Democrats, if I was a Democrat in the U.S. Senate, I would fight tooth and tongue not to have him thrown out.
How do you do that?
Wait a minute, why do you say that?
Because, oh my gosh.
You want that boy in there.
Don't you want to run against this guy? Like I said many times before, I've covered him for over 20 years. He is stupid, and he is unbalanced.
Well, he's compromised. I mean, he literally pledges to a document different than a representative should pledge to. He pledges to the Bible. He should pledge to the Constitution. Both are admirable. I mean,
throw out the sex stuff. There's so much about this guy.
One has to be sovereign if you are a United States senator.
And don't forget, he's lost elections in Alabama. People forget this. He's lost two runs for governor. So he has lost races in that state.
But not to a Democrat.
So then when the polls close, that is, the polling gets closer. I mean, this is what's happened, right, Scott?
Yes, it's tight.
Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan and Donald Trump and, of course, Kellyanne Conway and Sarah Sanders all now say, let's let the people of Alabama decide. And when asked, though, what's the president's position on this, Sarah Sanders says the people of Alabama should decide. But the president is endorsing him, which is meaning that he's trying to influence the election. It's not just up to the people of Alabama.
But the governor, who just succeeded to the governorship because the former governor was kicked out on ethics violations because he had a girlfriend and used government money to cover it up.
Girlfriend who worked for him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kay Ivey is the governor, current governor, and she said, I believe the women who testify against Roy Moore, and I'm voting for him.
Roy Moore.
Yes. Let this sink in for a moment. I believe that he is a pedophile, but I'm voting for him because he has an R after his name.
Is he a pedophile? This is just a little niggly thing that bothers me about this.
There's another layer. Is that where you're going?
Well, people are so quick to identify him in the harshest terms. He did not have intercourse with any of these women.
Well, he certainly tried with the 14-year-old.
She said that his hand rubbed her genitals on the outside of her clothing.
He touched her over her bra.
I don't know that this is a distinction worth noting, but he did not have intercourse. He did not have sex with any of these teenagers. Does that matter to anybody that he was attracted to these women,
girls? He was more than attracted. He acted on it.
He trolled for them at the food court. Yeah.
I'm saying the dumbest things on this podcast today.
Elif, mark this. We're going to cut this out.
Well, but I just... Okay, fine. Then there's no... Anybody that, you know, is attracted to and approaches teenage girls when they're in their 30s and the girls are 17.
Nope. Let's throw out them. He touched, fondled a 14-year-old and directed a 14-year-old, right, to fondle him.
Then we need make no more distinction about what happened, right?
No, right, exactly.
Okay, you know what? I'm learning as we go here. The president had just...
Are you okay? You're starting to slur your words a little bit. I'm worried about you.
Isn't that funny? He gives maybe the most important speech of his career so far. Donald Trump, And everybody's buzzing about the fact that he slurred the last two words of it. It sounded like he was drunk, falling asleep, passing out, having a stroke.
Steve, did you listen to it live? Because I didn't.
Yeah, we carried it live.
And then we played it back a bunch of times.
No, I heard it. It's not just a couple of words. The whole speech did not... when I was listening to it, I was just had it on the radio, actually. And I was listening to it going, wow, that... What's going on?
It's like the tape was being played a little more slowly.
That is a good way to put it. Yeah, absolutely. It sounded labored. If you were about to fall asleep or about to pass out, you're not getting enough air, you'd be like this. And that's the whole speech.
And, you know, a couple weeks ago, he had to pause for a bottle of water, which was delicious because of the funny made of Marco Rubio.
And the way he drinks water is like a toddler.
But I really think that's what was it. I think that's what was at play here. I think his mouth was dry. I mean, I speak for a living, and sometimes, you know, I'm reading a commercial or reading a newscast, and you have to get through the words before you can pause naturally.
Yeah.
And sometimes funny things happen with your mouth.
Meanwhile, the Middle East is erupting in violence over the move of the United States
embassy
to Jerusalem.
But one other thing, though, because I have heard more people who I, you know, are fairly credible, trying to put this slur thing into the bigger picture and saying, you know, that people behind the scenes say he isn't making sense or that he is slipping dramatically and that maybe this is a sign of other things. So
who where are you reading that? Huffington Post? Here's my point, Steve.
Morning, Joe.
I'm nothing but contrary today. But wouldn't it be nice?
Today?
Because I believe that. I believe that, Steve, what you're saying. But I wish that it was a source that I could rely on who wasn't so partisan.
Well, I mean, there
right, that the president's losing it physically and mentally.
I don't know that I believe that. I think, like I said, it was a dry mouth thing. But I think there's been some reporting of members of Congress saying they've had private conversations with him when they're kind of surprised by
things that he says.
And Bob Corker said it out loud, you know, that he's not capable. So, I mean, there are some credible people who are saying that. I think he just needed some water.
I actually do, too. I think it was a hydration issue. I think he was about to faint. I don't think he was well that day. Corey Lewandowski's co-authored a new book about Donald Trump, and in that he says, well, I haven't read the book yet, but I do know this. He talks about his appetite and the foods he eats. He does not eat healthy. His lunch will consist sometimes of two filet of fish and two Big Macs and a chocolate shake from McDonald's.
And then KFC. I love that.
His four food groups are McDonald's, KFC, Diet Coke, and something else. I mean, literally.
I like the Diet Coke.
Lewandowski is making news based on the president's diet.
Next time you feel guilty about ordering large fries, just remember you can eat whatever you want and still be president.
Yeah. You can't be healthy, though.
You can eat
though,
whatever you want and still grow up.
Proof
to be president
of that.
For the United States.
There's only three of us in the studio today. By the way, I mentioned also in our video that we have little mini pocket constitutions.
I saw that.
And declarations. This is handed out by a group called Freedom Factor. They want to get the Constitution and Declaration in the hands of every American home. Figure two people per home. They have 150 million of these they want
Whoa.
To hand out. You can order them for 40 cents each delivered. You can get 100 of them for $40. We are going, and by the way, on the inside flap, is the Mincing Rascals page.
Very nice.
Tells you about this podcast, and then there's the Declaration and the Constitution.
It says here a spirited, informed discussion.
So that's us, and that's that. And we are autographing these, you, Scott,
okay,
Steve, and I, Kristen and Eric, who aren't here, and then sending them out to the first 50 people who email johnwilliams@wgnradio.com and request one. So tell your friends, share this podcast. We want to grow it, and we're leveraging
Chance, right? You're ripping on Chance for going to Google for $1 million. The Constitution
for 40 cents.
I will autograph the Constitution of the United States of America and the Declaration of Independence. Thomas Jefferson said it would be okay if I did. Just email johnwilliams@wgnradio.com, and we'll connect with you and get you an autographed copy. You should have one in your home. You all right?
Yes.
Here's your recommendation.
Godless. Anyone?
Nope.
Godless on Netflix?
Nope.
It's kind of funny. A few weeks ago, I told you I was watching a post-World War II Netflix series and reading a post-World War II novel. I'm actually reading a Western novel right now, too, and watching this thing, Godless. It's Jeff Daniels stars in it. Sam Watterson had a role in the first few episodes. Lady Mary from Downton Abbey.
Yeah, right.
And the little boy from I'm sorry, I don't have these names
TV?
In my head. From
America?
Love Actually. You know, he grew up, he was on Game of Thrones, and now he's in this. Anyway, it's a very weird, quirky, but not quirky, like funny story. Jeff Daniels plays this really bad guy with a band of 30 guys, but he also has a heart. He has a troubled childhood, and then one of his lieutenants has broken away and is trying to do good. There's a village here in it where all of the miners, all the men were killed, so only women live in the town, which, you know, is a quirky thing. But it's godless. It's 7 episodes, and I've been through 6. I'm going to finish the 7th tonight.
Haven't seen it, but the review in The New Yorker was very good for it, too. They liked it. I think it was The New Yorker or The New York Times. But Jeff Daniels and the two women, which is an interesting, they say, take on this, they thought it was good.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. And just killing time until The Crown comes back.
By the way, I didn't know the little kid from Love Actually was in Game of Thrones.
Maybe he wasn't.
Okay. Get back to Get out of the thing.
I'm thinking of another child actor, maybe.
I'm recommending The Blenders. We have been featuring some Christmas music for obvious reasons on my show. My family thinks I overplay The Blenders, but they're an a cappella group who I met years ago from North Dakota and Minnesota and places like that. And if you like the Osmonds Christmas CD or the Letterman or any sort of, strong male voice a cappella arrangement of Christmas music, you will like The Blenders. Their latest CD is Holy Night. Nog is their first one and maybe their best one. They're all good. If you want to add to your collection of Christmas music, I'm recommending today Holy Night by The Blenders, Scott Stantis.
I am reading Polk by Walter Bornman, and it's a biography of James K. Polk, the one-term president, probably the most successful one-term president we've ever had. And now you do the discussions with
Jefferson and
Meriwether
and Meriwether Lewis and also Teddy Roosevelt.
Yes, and I am encouraging everyone to read a biography of a president you don't care about or have never heard of.
James Polk.
James Polk's what I'm reading now because I know nothing about him. I knew that he is highly regarded, like I said, for a one-term president, brought Texas into the Union. You can love him or hate him for that one. And some other, he did everything he said he was going to do in one term, and then he really did step away from it. But, I mean, just pick up a book about Benjamin Harrison or, McKinley. I mean, there's a couple of good biographies out now of McKinley and of Grant. But I'm just saying, just expand your universe instead of Lincoln, Washington,
Jefferson,
Roosevelt.
Yeah. That has been done. So Polk is now on your reading list. That's the name of the book, too?
It's Polk by Walter Bornman.
That's Scott Stantis. He's the editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. He also drew the cover art of the Songs of Good Cheer music book this year for Eric Zorn and Mary Schmeek. I'll let Eric talk about that next week. Steve Bertrand, thank you for joining us as well. Krista McQuarrie and Eric could not join us this week. Our engineer this week is Elif Garris. She's also the producer of The Mincing Rascals. Hope you're having a happy holidays. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to The Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNradio.com. Just click on the WGN Plus tab. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus podcast network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio. We'll be right back.